Where's this? Is it my water?
Test. Test, test.
It's April 25th, 2019, and I call the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education to order. It is now 4:30 p.m. Dr. Mitchell, will you please do roll call?
Sure. Gary
Chen? Here.
Lynn Evancamp?
Here.
Angelina Pride?
Present.
David Malkin?
Present.
Donna
Friedman? Here.
All board members are present.
Are there any changes or items to be pulled from the agenda?
None from staff.
May I have a motion to adopt the agenda of the board study session of Thursday, April 25th, 2019?
I make a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. Motion carries. All in attendance will be led in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag by Board Clerk Angelina M. Pride.
Please rise. Right hand over your heart. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Mitchell, are there any public comments this afternoon?
Yes, there's one.
Please note the public is welcome to provide comment to the board. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes unless extended or limited by vote of the board. A maximum of 20 minutes unless extended by the board is allocated for each subject discussed. The Brown Act open meeting, the regulations under which the board must operate, do not allow board members to comment on non-agenda items or information you may bring up that are not in the agenda. Additionally, no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a comment. Roy Humphreys.
Okay, first of all, thank you for all the good things you did. And as you know, the only way we can move forward is if we're honest about our past. Something to help you with this would be a publication put about the Nurses Service Association there, and it's called Workplace Violence. Okay, that would be a very helpful thing, and some people might want to get some attorneys for that issue. Then we have to move to the packet that was sent to the Los Angeles County District Attorney. We're still waiting some action on that, and that has to do with the bogus bond oversight committee that was going on due to all the compilation of documents. The enclosed documents will evidence that the district's failure to comply with state laws and regulations regarding the formation and function of the bond oversight committee for years. Myself and others have been subject to unlawful acts of which they, under Superintendent Mitchell and the board, have failed to remedy voluntarily. And then we come to, I had the opportunity to listen to Superintendent Mitchell on the December 13th comments where she noted that the Nogales ASB money and the Macy Day Parade of $20,000, of which I've mentioned previously, went to no documentation. However, the documentation, which I got from the superintendent, by the way, thank you, was $21,267.69. And it reminds me of the, remember that game we played when we were kids, card game, it's called Go Fish. It is noted also that Nigel County gave classes to the Nogales ASB and followed up with 2 pages of discrepancies on the following audit report. And, well, everybody wants to know what happened to Ms. Wilson. Then we have Mr. Flores over here in this last board meeting around the Oswald, enumerated the $20 million that, quote, didn't fall from the sky. The only thing is, as he enumerated, it didn't mount up to $20 million. So much for that. And so we can also have documentations on that particular situation. And then we have also, and it's going back, but again, you have to own up to your past. And we had Ms. Judy Nye, who was the outgoing board member, $2,500 to go to a non-existent situation down in San Diego. Well, and who exposed that? I know this guy's name's Roy Humphreys, by the way. Thank you. And then we could go on and on, and you know the sexual misconduct that's gone on in this district, so forth. But you know that's for another. But the real issue here is integrity and character. And all the awards in the world will not get rid of that stain. And the irony of is it, what I got 5 seconds. It's all you had to do is take over the recording of just one board meeting.
Next, we will have an overview.
You want to extend my time for the 20 minutes?
I'm sorry, we're not.
No. Okay, thank you.
Next, we will have an overview on the mid-year progress of the Local Control Accountability Plan, LCAP. I will turn it over to Dr. Mitchell at this time.
Thank you. So for the board, our Ed Services team, who is here to my left, have been working hard in preparing the mid-year review for our LCAP to share with you the work that has been taking place throughout the year that is demonstrated in or is published in our LCAP. You'll recall that in the past, we've done this in 2 study sessions. We've done goals 3 through 6 first, and then goals 1 and 2 in a second study session. And this year, we have opted to do all 6 goals together and to reformat it a little bit to share our work as best we can through the lens of our students. And so at this point, I am going to turn it over to Dr. Zamora, who will introduce the process. And I also would like to thank Brian Huff for his lead on this work. So to you, Maddie.
Thank you. Thank you. So tonight, as Dr. Mitchell indicated, this is a mid-year report, and it is much more comprehensive because it's goals 1 through 6 all together. So tonight, we want to give you an overview through the lens of our students and also highlight the programs and opportunities that we offer to our teachers, parents, staff, and site administrators as they lead the work as well, in collaboration with all of us to educate our students here in Roland Unified. So on this slide, this is just a reminder of the 8 state priorities that must be addressed in our local control and accountability plan. They have not changed. They are still the same 8 state priorities, and we do address them in our local control plan. On this slide, this just indicates the timeline. We gather data in January through April. Today, April 25th, we are providing an update, and this is an update of the second year of our plan. We continue the work as we revise our plan and bring it back to the board for review on June 5th. And the process for this year, as we move into next year's plan, is completed with our board approving it on June 18th prior to sending it to the County Office of Education. On this slide, through our presentation, we want to answer this question for you. We want to give you some information that says, how do actions in the LCAP impact students, parents, and staff? And you will see that throughout the presentation in every element that is up on the slide, such as through elementary education, special education, foster youth, English learners, leadership, teachers, secondary education, and, of course, students experiencing homelessness. With that, I will turn it over to our Director of Elementary Education, Dr. Rodriguez.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me there? Better. Okay. Through the lens of an elementary student, I will highlight the ways in which the LCAP support our USD initiatives and programs. The LCAP provides a variety of experiences to great lengths. One example of an instructional shift is the opportunity for students to participate and engage in environmental science. Students, for example, learn by doing hands-on experiences as they learn the life cycle, nurture, and grow a variety of plants, vegetables, and flowers. A new shift this year, as we gathered information through the lens of student voice, was the opportunity for students to convey their thoughts in the form of student surveys. From the many questions of the student surveys given to elementary students, the 3 top responses were based around students' perspectives towards teachers and learning. Based on the response of 1,745 elementary students, 94% feel that teachers encourage them to share their ideas around things they are studying in class. 95% of students feel that their teacher welcomes explanations of answers and are interested in hearing why they think what they think. And finally, 97% feel confident that it is okay to ask questions and make mistakes in class, because that is the way we learn. This reflects a shift in instruction across our district. These are practices that support autonomy and trust in everyday learning in classrooms. Elementary students at Roland Unified experience a variety of approaches, strategies, and initiatives around the Roland Unified framework. Every elementary school has selected an area of focus that includes cognitive guided instruction for math, readers and writers workshop, or inquiry. Because of the focus areas training over the last 3 years, students are experiencing more small group instruction, talking about problem-solving strategies, learning strategies from each other, and having deeper and meaningful conversations through inquiry and questioning. Furthermore, students explore the Next Generation Science Standards, or NGSS, through hands-on exposure led by the California Science Center. All schools participate in Next Generation Science Standards training and implementation over the past 3 years at all 14 of our elementary schools. Because of the LCAP funding source, these opportunities are available to all students. As a result to these commitments funded through the LCAP, 75% of fifth and sixth grade students feel that if they need help with homework, they know where and how to access tutoring help. 88% of fifth and sixth grade students feel that their teacher notices if they have trouble learning something. This is a reflection of the questioning techniques students are learning through inquiry. Students at Roland Unified are enrolled in award-winning schools, such as the Gold Ribbon and California Distinguished Schools. Our schools support college and career readiness through AVID, International Baccalaureate, No Excuses University, College for Every Student, and Dual Immersion. These programs have been supported through the LCAP. For this reason, our students prosper in these programs by the exposure of college and career readiness opportunities. Furthermore, students engage in the visual and performing arts and thrive in our Music for All programs at all 14 of our elementary schools for the past 3 years. Although extracurricular activities, sports, and clubs are offered to 100% of our students at Roland, 61% of our students take advantage of this opportunity. Our goal is to increase the number of students at each site in the upcoming year. Saturday Exploration Academy is a fun and exciting opportunity to foster love and learning by exploring and growing student ideas, innovative thinking, and expansion of knowledge. Students that attend the Exploration Academy have the freedom to create and invent things that are interesting to them. Student attendance grew by over 500 students from the previous year. These opportunities are offered at 6 different sites 7 times a year. Students yearn for more days and continue to request more opportunities to attend. All of this is possible by the LCAP allocations. Goal 4 of our LCAP supports significant work by building services. Curbside appeal is extremely important. Therefore, 70% of our 5th and 6th grade students agree or strongly agree that school sites are clean and cared for. LCAP also funds technology and updated fast Wi-Fi connections to all schools. Students in grades 3 through 6 have access to Chromebooks, and students in grades TK through 2nd grade have access to iPads. Seesaw in grades TK through 2nd grade is in response to teachers using it across the district in their everyday instruction. Students are able to utilize Seesaw to develop formative assessments. This is important because this creates ownership for their own learning and knowledge. LCAP expands beyond positive student achievement through our Positive Behavior Intervention and Supports, or PBIS. Students engage in restorative practices each and every day through the shared language and common commitments that students have made to reinforce positive behavioral outcomes. Through the LCAP student survey, new evidence demonstrates that students are feeling safe at school and are connected to at least one teacher at their site, which research shows that this increases success. 85% of students feel safe at school, and 89% of our 5th and 6th grade students feel they have a good relationship with at least one teacher.
Depends how long his is.
What?
Am I forgetting the questions?
I think I have my longest
part. Well, good late afternoon and early evening. Board, I am excited to report about secondary students and their perspective of what it looks like to be a RUSD student and how the LCAP will support their learning. And I want to start with this picture. There's two on the side with teachers and students really embracing, and then, of course, our ultimate goal is to graduate our students. But on the left side, you see on a day which was for our professional learning day, which is supported by the LCAP, and which the entire district for teachers, it was a pupil-free day, and we had teachers learning. And one of the things that they were able to do was what is known as an empathy interview. And what you see on the left is teachers got to interview students, and students got to share their perspective about their challenges, their needs, their background. And teachers learned about their students not just as students in a classroom, but as human beings. So from there, it really lends itself to the Roland Unified School District's teaching and learning framework, and what we're focusing on is successful learning for all students. So in order to really understand how to help our students be successful, we have to know about them. And so the two pictures on the side really shows teachers taking the time to know their students. Rebecca shared data earlier about a survey that was given to students, and it was given to students across the board, and our secondary students, 3,580 of them, responded with these particular data points about strong participation in learning. And as you can see, from their perspective, teachers were encouraging them to share their ideas, to explain their answers, and it's okay to ask questions. These are strong data points that we want to point out as a direct result from LCAP and what the schools at the secondary level have been doing to encourage the student participation. So some of our schools have embarked on project-based learning, understanding by design, literacy. All of these key areas of best practices have helped in regards to the data that you saw previously. We've also, as an LCAP, have invested heavily in instructional coaches who have been able to help us support our teachers in ensuring that these best practices are affecting our students in a positive way. The schools have endeavored in sharing these best practices amongst themselves as well as in instructional leadership teams across the district on the core content areas. Teachers share best practices at the secondary level and bring it back to the school sites. a key data point up there is that 81% of the students know that if they need help with homework, they can get tutoring help. However, 63% of our students have noticed that the teachers don't notice them when they have trouble learning. That is something that we need to work on. And one of our focus areas of successful learning for all students means that we have to dig deep into who our students are. However, there is data that is not up there that is supported in knowing that when students have a need for academic support, 84% of our students did respond by saying, I am aware of resources available to me on campus for academic support. And some of that academic support includes math support classes, opportunities classes, after-school tutoring. We also have credit recovery classes and, of course, summer school for enrichment and advancement. LCAP goal number two, we look at the college readiness and 21st century skills. And we have 3,588 responses. And one of the things that the LCAP has heavily invested in is counseling support. And the state ratio is 760 students for every one counselor. However, our district and our contract states that a maximum ratio is 420 students to one counselor at the high school and 550 students to one counselor at the middle school. But within the LCAP and through site funding, we've actually reduced that ratio quite significantly. In fact, that ratio is closer to about 350 to 1 at the high school and about 450 to 1 at the middle school. And again, that's a product of the investment of ensuring counseling support for college and career readiness. We're very excited to see a lot of the programs that we offer. And students not only get to benefit from closer counselor to student ratio and relationships, but they also benefited from a new partnership from California Career Zone in which they were able to complete activities. And we saw 92% of our students able to complete activities such as interest profilers, career interest surveys, and et cetera. We have, remember, our college fair that happens every fall. This is our third annual one. We had notable universities such as Harvard. We had the Pomona Colleges. We had Pepperdine. And of course, the best university of all, UC Irvine. We also continued our partnership with We also continued our partnership with Azusa Pacific, Grand Canyon, and University of Laverne to ensure that our students have automatic admission for our graduates. And in fact, we're bringing a lot of our students over the summer, undergraduate students over the summer, to walk those campuses so that they can share and know what college is all about. And of course, we continue our partnership with Mount SAC with dual enrollment, as well as for summer school courses. AVID has been an ongoing support in the LCAP. We not only support AVID through funding, but we actively support AVID through trainings. Project Lead the Way, we have offered a lot of classes. This year, you've all, many of you, I saw in when we went to Giano for those the College and Career Ready Action Labs, the STEM Labs, that is new as well. Career Technical Ed have brought on 8 new courses this year for A through G approval, and the CTE pathways are 8 pathways. Of course, IB schools, AP is continued. And that has brought a lot of distinction to our schools. This year, one of our high schools got recognized as a California Distinguished School. And the last little image you see over there on the bottom right is our goal ultimately is that they get that cap and gown, walk across that platform, and they're graduates. As Dr. Rodriguez had mentioned earlier, all of our schools are in cohorts for PBIS, Positive Behavior Intervention and Supports. In this positive behavior. And these are part of our 21st century skills. LCAP goal number 2 is college and career readiness and 21st century skills. And the skill sets that we need to teach our students in regards to positive behaviors and how to correct those positive behaviors, how to interact with your fellow students, how to demonstrate a sense of restorative practices to ensure when there is wrong, you know how to right, you know how to make things right. And you see on the bottom left corner is our suspension rates, as well as students going to. My time is up. I'm done. All right.
Time's up.
Although first semester from last year and first semester from this year are very similar in the number of what is known as Ed Code suspendable acts, we've actually decreased the actual number of suspensions because they participated in the Alternative to Suspension program. In that program, they were under the supervision of a teacher, and the teacher led them through restorative practices, talked to them about what mistakes they made and the misconducts and misbehaviors, and set plans when they went back to their schools, how can we right the wrong? We also have been, as you see, throughout the district, technology services and building services working hard to beautify the campus, offering technology support, and our students are definitely benefiting from that. We have our students, 6,105 email accounts created for our students. In our partnership with Sprint, we had 279 hotspots, free Wi-Fi for our students. We had Nearpod being used in 98 classes, and this is really used for formative assessments, checking for understanding for our teachers, because they really wanted a tool in which they can do that more effectively. We have access for internet 10 times faster, I believe it is. I mean, these are things that our students are experiencing at school through the LCAP. And of course, building services have been working hard. Although 68% of the students strongly agreed that the school is clean, we do know that a lot of work is being done to address beautifying the campuses. We've been paving them. You see new structures. And we really, when we dig down deeper into why it's only 68%, we do know that we've been able to say it's probably the boys' best restroom that need a lot of cleaning. But we do know that building services is working hard at that to beautify the campuses. So I've had an opportunity to really just share a lot about the highlights of what our secondary students have been able to experience. And Mr. Malkin, this leaves time for the questioning.
Okay, so this is the time we're going to go in order. And if you have any questions for LCAP 1 and 2, this would be the time to do that. So Carrie, if you'd like to go first, if you have any questions on the presentation or LCAP 1 and 2.
Question on that.
Okay.
On page 6? Elementary part.
On slide 6.
Page six.
Okay.
On slide 6, and it's 94% answered and 95-97. And this survey for 1,745 students. What grade level are they from? What's the youngest level?
I believe it was fifth grade. Uh-huh. Fifth and sixth graders.
Okay.
Brian, do you want to share about our student voice survey?
Sure. So this was the first year we were able to do a comprehensive student survey. We got about 5,300 students respond in grades 5 through 12. When we did a survey a couple of years ago, fifth grade was about the youngest. We got feedback from teachers that they really understood the items, so we stuck with those grade levels.
Yeah. My question: if they're younger than fifth grade and lower, then they don't even understand the question. Yeah, so that's it. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
On the questions, do they have a chance, for instance, the question about the cleanliness? Are we defining cleanliness? Are we talking about paint that needs to be done? Or are we talking about trash on the ground that students drop?
We did mention everything. I was one of the participants that asked the questions. So, yes, we did. We did clarify if they had questions in terms of, do you mean the restrooms? Do you mean our classrooms? Do you mean our school in general? So we did take the whole gamut.
So that particular question, we had some questions as a follow-up, so if they disagreed with it. So the way the question was written was, my school is clean, strongly agree, agree, disagree, or strongly disagree. And if they disagreed, we had an open-ended text where they could tell us more about that.
Okay.
So we're doing more analysis on that. But then what we did was all the Ed Services analyzed the data and then came up with focus group questions. So we surveyed 5,000 students, got the data, then went out to 10 schools and talked to small groups and shared, well, these were their findings. This is what we found out. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Good.
So.
I was glad to hear. I think, Frank, on slide 14 or page 14, you said that 63% is where we need to concentrate because the students did not feel the teachers noticed if they understood or if they needed help. And that's a very important part of this equation because the teacher should be able to pick up quickly, and we want the students to feel that they are. On that same slide down lower in the page where you're talking about the counselor ratios, are those, you didn't have an elementary level, is that right? You had high school and middle school?
Right.
That's my last question. Okay, that's it.
Going back to the surveys and the focus groups, I want to make sure I'm understanding correctly. So there was a written survey given to all students?
Yes, in fifth through 12th grade.
Was it given like during school time or? Okay. And then you said that they had like strongly agree, whatever, and that they could then enter additional information if they wanted to elaborate on it.
For select questions that, right, we had follow-up open and open text box responses.
Okay. Just the reason I ask is because I was just wondering on some of the questions. For example, there was the question about where to get tutoring help. And so I was just wondering, do they think, well, yeah, you know, mom and dad can take me and pay for a tutor or, you know, or were they talking specifically about where to get tutoring help from the district or on their campus? Did the question state specifically?
So we just asked the question as you see it there. If I need help with homework, I can get tutoring help. And then the other one that Frank mentioned, if I need help, there are resources available for me. We did not ask a follow-up question on that. That would probably be a good addition for next year.
Yeah, because I'm just concerned that some of the kids will think, well, yeah, you know, my mom, my dad, my cousin, right, brother, whoever. But I want to know, do they know what resources are available to them through the district? Then my other question is, so the focus group was a result of the survey questions where you guys wanted to gather additional information?
Right. So we had about 15 to 20 findings from the survey, and we wanted to get more information from the students about. So, for example, those three quotes that we had at the beginning of the elementary and the secondary, those were the top-rated survey questions.
Oh, okay.
So, and one of them was, I feel like it's okay to make mistakes and share my. So we wanted to get more information from them about what that looks like in a classroom. Other other key findings from the survey that we just asked follow-up questions to get more anecdotal information.
And what factors were used to determine who could participate in those focus groups?
So this year we did a random sample of students and made sure there was representation from all the LCFF subgroups. So we did all of the secondary schools and then three elementary schools, Northside School and then Southside Schools. And we made sure that there was at least two foster students, two students low income, two English learners, students that are receiving special education services. So we made sure that that was represented equally in the groups. And then for the high schools, because they have leadership teams, we gave one slot of the 18 slots for them to choose a leadership student to participate in that. So tried to make sure that it was random so that we weren't cherry-picking students, and
right.
We were getting honest feedback, and also represented students that were important for the LCFF.
And who conducted those focus groups?
So the Ed Services staff here.
Okay. So you guys. Okay. No, I remember the ones from previous years, yeah.
This year we did the survey first, mm-hmm. So more students had the opportunity to share perspective, and then we went back and did the focus groups and had follow-up questions so we seek even greater clarity. So your students said that 88% do this. How do you do that, or where does this happen, and so forth?
All right. Thank you, Brian.
On page 6, the end that you have there, 1745, what percentage is that of the total potential number of students?
So 1745, it's fifth and sixth graders. So there are about 1,000, I don't have a top of my head, but about 1,000 students in every grade level. So out of 2,000, around 2,000.
Okay.
I can get you the exact
number. No, that if it's out of 2,000, that's a good response then.
It was a very good, we had about a 75% response rate.
Yes, very good. Okay. On the, we want all the kids to go to college, yet as we know, college is looking for students that are well-rounded, that participate in multiple activities, yet on page 8, 61%, were involved in sports or clubs or other activities. At the beginning of the year, do we have a club rush at all, where all the clubs have tables set up and kids rush to join them?
And David, that's elementary. That's
right.
A sixth grade number. That's not a high school number.
Okay.
But yes, we do club rush.
Okay, you do
yes,
have
yes, we do club rush.
Okay. Okay. On the Saturday program on page 10, is there a charge for that for the students?
No.
So that's free?
Free. Okay. Open to all students.
Okay. And then on page 10, also on the bottom, the 85% of students in grades 5 and 6 agree or strongly agree that I feel safe at school. It'd be nice if we can, I know 100% is not possible, but it'd be nice to get a higher score, because if we have 15% of our students that don't feel safe, and then I can be able to learn if they don't feel safe. So I'd be curious, why they don't feel safe. And then also on the secondary, the 3,580, is that, approximately what percentage of those students that represented?
I do not know.
Okay.
There are around 5,000 secondary students. This 3580 is of the 7th through 12th grade.
Right.
So I don't know the total.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what group that represented of the total students. I agree with my peers over here that 63% of the teachers did not notice that they were having learning problems.
Did notice.
Huh?
Yes, we need to correct that. They
Oh, I noticed, yeah. I mean, noticed. I would be interested if we could do follow-up with the teachers to find out why that is. You know, is it a workload situation or what it is that they're having problems with those other students that aren't being recognized? On the counselor ratios, is that strictly, because when I've asked about counselors in the past, it's always been counselors that talk about A through G requirements and graduation requirements and things like that. For mental health issues and things like this, do these counselors identify those issues and then refer on to other people, or do we have other counselors to handle those issues?
Yes, I think you've explained that situation very accurately. They do identify. Oftentimes, our counselors are the first line of understanding where additional resources are needed. And I believe later on we'll get into more details about those kind of supports for those for students who need those interventions.
Mm-hmm. You know, the 68% that feel that the campuses are clean, I think a good follow-up question would be asking the parents if their son or child's room is clean at home and see what percentage we get on that. The suspensions and alternatives to suspensions, you know, that's a catch-22 on that, you know. I like it because the numbers are going down. But then when I hear the teachers coming to the board meetings, they're complaining that nothing happens to the students that are misbehaving. So it's like you don't suspend them, but then at the other end, you hear from the teachers that we're not being aggressive enough on dealing with behavioral problems. So, you know, it's hard for me to interpret those numbers as to is that good or is that bad. I think the alternatives to suspensions going up, I think that's good. Is that because of the ALT that we opened up, that they're going over there?
Yes. At the ATS, the alternative ATS. Suspension, although these are ed codes, allows for us to actually suspend them, and historically suspension meant that we send them home, unsupervised oftentimes with families, but in this case, at the alternative to suspension, they are supervised under a teacher. Yeah. So they may have violated the ed code, but we wanted them to be under the supervision of a teacher, but also to receive the kind of benefit that a teacher would offer, such as teaching them how to right the wrong, how to plan for when they go back to the site, how to apologize to a teacher, how to,
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm coming from, is that I would hope that it would be more instructional and be changing behavior in a positive way rather than being punitive. And so to me, that looks good. But like I said, when I come to the board meetings, I hear teachers speaking. They interpret it a different way.
I think it's important to note that in those numbers, in 17-18, it was 232 students who were suspended from school, so removed from school. 75 of those students went to alternative suspension. They were still suspended. They went to alternative suspension and received some of the supports that Frank just mentioned. In the 18-19 school year, and again, both of these are comparing first semester, was 230. So it's two fewer students removed from schools. So, but it is more students are engaging in, as Frank had shared, those the alternative to suspension.
Right. I think it's good.
So I think that number, when we only look at the top number, it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. You have to look at both of them combined.
And then,
also just to also iterate that what you see on the dashboard is just what's on the top line. So the dashboard will display the 157 to 124, but in reality, there are the staff is responding and supporting students with both suspensions and alternative suspensions.
Okay, and I don't on the safety. Are you going to be covering safety more under Goal 5, or since you brought it up here, I guess we can open it for questions.
So So Goal 5 is woven through all of the stories.
Okay. Well, for the safety, two things. One, if there could be a focus group on the safety question next time, because, like I said earlier, safety is really important to have a positive learning environment. And then under, what is this thing here? We got all these magazines. Under CSBA's monthly magazine here, School News, there's a new law that came out, AB 1747, regarding safety plans and safety in the schools, where you have to involve the police department, the sheriff's department, first responders, the fire department. Have we involved those people now? Okay, and there was one other one. The other one is last month now. You know, I participated in the CTE, Career Technical Education program, and I noticed in the elementary school, you have no excuse, university, all kids go to college and all this. Do we do anything focusing on CTE at all at that grade level?
So in terms of particular specifics of CTE, we don't have a CTE elementary school program. Mm-hmm. So we started at the high school, and then we built the career labs at the middle school level. We don't have a CTE, because part of that is the certification for a teacher is a secondary single subject credential. But the work that they do in terms of problem solving, exposure to technology, working together as a team, collaborating, et cetera, and exploring careers does happen at the elementary level.
Because that's what I was curious about, is that education should be a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many choices. There's college, there's CTE,
mm-hmm.
There's independent businesses, et cetera.
Correct.
And I think we need to put all the choices out,
mm-hmm.
and let the child choose which path they would like to choose. Education now in college is almost beyond so many students' reaches because of funding. I think they should have the choice to choose college, but is it a reality? Is it a real mm-hmm. choice that they have?
Right. I think our interest or goal is that, and when I've said this before, when a student graduates from our school, that we have provided them every opportunity to go to a four-year school, a two-year school, a trade school, military, straight into the workforce, travel, whatever their choice is, but we haven't limited their choices at all. And so some of the programs at the elementary level is opening up school students' eyes to the possibilities that they can go to college, they
right.
can achieve that opportunity, and these are the steps that it would take to be able to do that. And then, but specific CTE courses start at the middle school.
Which we saw at Nogales High School when they had the college signing, that of all the kids there, half of them stood up when they asked, how many are you the first
generation,
person in your family to go to college? And half of those students stood up, which was remarkable to see that many. Okay, thank you.
As far as the different choices, the lab at Giano that opened up, those kids get to rotate around and have all these different fields that they could go into. So they spark their interest in anything, and the kids like that. The presentation was so nice how you did it compared to other years that we have listened. And so thank you. Very good. I really enjoyed the first page, which almost everybody talked about. Page 6 with the percentages, with the kids knowing to ask questions and share and all that. So everything was wonderful. Thank you. You did a great job. I do have questions about on the full report, high school. Just quick question. I noticed for Santana on page 37 of the where it says college and career readiness, it was 0% prepared. But then I was reading about the 12 students that go to adult school. They don't count as a dropout. They count as a dropout. Could you give them some more information? That was terrible to read that.
So up until last year, students that transfer to the adult school immediately after completing grade 12 are removed from the calculation. So we weren't penalized from our graduation rate. So that was, as of last year, changed, and they recalculated the last 2 years of the graduation rate. which is why the continuation schools across the state dropped. So we're kind of, it's kind of an apples to oranges comparison. You can't, if you go on DataQuest now, it tells you very clearly, like, do not compare this to old years. So it's sort of a, we're at a baseline year for Santana, and Frank Chang has been doing a lot of work and building new pathways and strategies to increase that.
And those students that graduate at the adult school, they don't get any credit in our anything, it seems like, that came from Santana, that went to the adult school with the high school diploma.
They do,
but the Roland, it shows that, no, we didn't have, and we had dropouts instead, which they really kind of were not dropouts. They continued their education,
right.
But it shows on the paperwork that they were.
Yeah.
Okay. And then on page 38, Santana. Oh, I wanted to know where it says, like, cohort students. What does that mean? Because they don't add up for the diploma graduation, still enrolled, and dropouts.
So That cohort number is the, let me make sure I'm looking at this.
I can skip.
Transfer dropout. So that's the four-year cohort. So those are the students that over the 4 years were part of the graduating class.
And that's why the numbers are different. They don't add up to that. Okay, and the last one is on page 47. Let's see, it said the following are the articulation activity results. So Nogales and Roland CTE classes were outstanding. They passed a lot of the tests. Everyone passed. It was outstanding. But my question is for Nogales and Roland ROP, they did not. And do we know why that the numbers are so low as far as passing the tests for those ROP classes when the other our teachers at Roland got 100%? Okay, well, where it says number of applicants, number of test takers, and number of passing. So Nogales and Roland District teachers that were in the CTA, they all passed the test, all 76 and all 20, 76 at Roland and 20. And then at the ROP, they took the test, but like a lot of them did not pass it. I was wondering if you possibly would know. How it would. Okay.
Excuse me, can I interject real quick? Are they talking about on that part the test that they have to take in order to matriculate the program to the community college?
Yeah.
Okay.
We can get an answer.
I was just curious why, because we did really good and then, okay. All right. Thank you so much.
This.
So, good evening. I'm going to talk a little bit about special education this evening. I put these numbers up here because I wanted you to see the top four categories in disabilities. But more importantly, each one of these numbers represent a student who oftentimes experiences quite a bit of frustration in their learning, as you know, and oftentimes will encounter failure throughout their day with different tasks and skills that they're trying to encounter, are trying to learn. So it's very important that we pay attention to that, obviously, because that frustration can lead to behaviors, can lead to things that take them off task and take them away from focusing on their learning. So we're excited that we have implemented some programs that help decrease that frustration, help kids access the Common Core in the least restrictive environment. So, I'm the one that does that, I guess. Okay. Can you? I need an accommodation. So one of the things we've implemented, thanks to you, Board, and your support, is the attainment curriculum. Not that yet. Sorry. The attainment curriculum is for students with moderate to severe disabilities, and it's aligned with Common Core standards. All moderate to severe special day classrooms were trained and supplied with curriculum to ensure that students are meeting their goals and objectives and are learning material aligned with Common Core standards. The curriculum allows teachers materials to instruct students and, most importantly, help them meet their goals and objectives relative to Common Core standards. So we're excited about attainment and continuing that. Gemini is an evidence-based intervention that uses video modeling. It's a very interesting intervention, and it's been very successful with our students with autism. The way it works is it's also in moderate to severe classrooms, but it engages students in video modeling via iPads and technology that are very stimulating and engaging. And so a lot of our students with autism utilize this approach to improve their language and communication skills. So we're excited again about continuing that program. Co-teaching is an instructional model that we've implemented at different sites. We're excited about this model because it allows for many students to be in the least restrictive environment and be instructed in the least restrictive environment, meaning a education specialist will co-teach that classroom with a general education teacher. So they co-plan, they co-teach the lesson, and it affords a lot of our students with disabilities to be in that environment to, again, access Common Core standards and make progress. One of the programs I'm most excited about is the Read and Write program. It's an accommodation software. And you can really see students, in terms of speaking to students' experience with this accommodation software, you can really see that frustration level come down immediately. The software basically allows for students, it's a Google overlay, it allows for students to have text read to them, or they can dictate into the computer, which produces text for them. So for a lot of students, it's very, very difficult just to get started on a project, just to get engaged in that project, engage in the reading and writing project that's in front of them. And so having those accommodations via read aloud and dictation helps them start that process. I have a video, actually, that I want to show you. I really like this little guy. He's gonna kind of give you a life-size picture of the frustration level being alleviated with the use of some of these accommodations.
So the read and write program, you're using it on what? What do you use it on?
My Chromebook.
Okay, your Chromebook. And what is it that you do with it?
We write like things. Like before we had to write about like a, we had to write about something in my classroom, and it was too hard to type it. So Mr. Isaac pulled us out so he could help us, and we went on that program, and all we need to do is just speak in it.
So you're using the talk and type?
Yeah.
So you're talking to the computer, and you're liking it?
Uh-huh.
Good. What are you liking it?
That we don't have to type, like, 40,000 letters.
Mm-hmm.
We can just say into it.
Cool.
So read and write is up above, and post is his work after using the accommodation software. This was what his backpack looked like before he actually started using that accommodation software, and these are more products that he produced utilizing that. The other great thing about read and write, again, is least restrictive environment is very important to deliver services in the general education classroom with same age peers. And read and write allows for that to happen. All of the students in that classroom were utilizing read and write, general ed and students with disabilities. A quote from a third grade teacher, a couple of quotes, after utilizing read and write in her entire classroom, it took 12 to 15 minutes to type a paragraph for most kids on average. After using read and write, it was 3 to 5 minutes typed using the read and write software and accommodations for all students, not just students with disabilities. Reduces stress around organization for special education students, and also students are catching errors in their writing that they would have not caught on their own when using read aloud. So when they dictate and look at the paragraph and have it read back to them, they catch more errors than when they read it silently. So I got specific into that accommodation software because I think it's quite powerful in allowing kids to access the curriculum and move forward. So we're going to keep moving forward with a lot of these programs and are excited to start new programs also. So thanks again for supporting us.
So LCAP 1, which is Student Achievement for All, a major part of it is our English learner subgroup. And currently at Roland Unified, we have about 1,321 English learners. We have 34 languages. Our highest language is Spanish, which is at 69%. Then our next language is Mandarin, which is at 17%. And then we have Cantonese at 6%. And surprisingly, some of our languages have switched in terms of percentages. So the next highest one after Mandarin is Cantonese at 6%, then Tagalog, then Indonesian, Arabic, Vietnamese, and then Korean. And those other languages, the last three are 1%. So it's always changing every year, but right now, of course, our top is always Spanish and Mandarin. For the purposes of the next few slides, I'm going to focus on our secondary group of English learners and our newcomers because that's our biggest group right now. And I'll go over that. Right here we have our newcomers from our two high schools. And as we look at this data, we know that we have a lot of room for improvement with our English learners. But in terms of performing in the state, we double in every of the areas, our rate. I know that it's really surprising for many people because just of the fact that the SBAC is very much language-based and there's a lot of reading and writing. And if you remember English learners, it's always a moving group. As the English learners get better, we reclassify them and they move on, and then we get new English learners. So it's always constantly moving. So we want to obviously improve, but we have been recognized for the past 2 years by English learner advocacy groups for our scores on SBAC. Wanted just to give you a little bit of context because we have a lot of all our English learners, they're all pretty unique. And so when we look at our LCAP actions, there's different there's different supports for different types of English learners, and also we differentiate some of our professional development. So one of our English learners, which I'll be talking about our group, it's our recent arrivals. But even our recent arrivals to the country, they vary because we have some students that come highly educated from other countries, and we have some students that actually have no prior schooling or very limited prior schooling. We also have our migrant students, which they're not all English learners, but a lot of them are. And we have, of course, our long-term English learners and our students that are doing well and that get reclassified, and then we monitor them. The LCAP, as mentioned before, delineates different levels of support that we have for students. So I'm not going to show that first video. I'm just going to have a couple of videos embedded there, and I know it was probably, if you could probably have a chance to look at it later. But basically, this is just a day in an English learner life. So basically, our newcomers, when they come in, our actual kids have made videos for them in different languages. So we have Spanish, Mum, and Chinese so far. And what the video does is actually our newcomers telling them what to expect, because if you can imagine, if they didn't have any schooling, they're coming from a different type of environment, going into a comprehensive high school like Nogales or Roland can be very daunting for them. So if you look at the video, it's very cute because they talk about, you know, what to expect with their teacher, what are some top words, you know, top questions that they want to ask, like going to the restroom, things like that. So they talk of, the kids really do a good job of it. I know. Besides having the different typologies of English learners, we also have different English learners that come with proficiency levels. So we have some English learners, even though they're recent arrivals, they have a higher proficiency level, and some have beginning. One of the things in the day that we know that helps support English learners, it's the instructional materials that's provided through the LCAP, the sometimes increased decreased class size, also specialized PD that's provided for English learners. But when they go throughout their day, they're doing what we call double the work, because if they're very limited in English, they're, of course, working on their English language at the same time that they're learning content. And then, of course, the other thing that I wanted to mention in terms of our USD is that with the professional development that they have, they receive, of course, differentiated instruction in ELD, but also throughout the day in social studies, science, and math. And lastly, we're bridging the digital divide with our English learners, because thanks to your support, all our classrooms with ELs pretty much have the technology, the one-to-one. They also have Wi-Fi in their home if it's needed at the secondary level. So, and then, of course, they participate in different events. And the schools, our schools make sure that they're welcome and that they're able to participate as many curricular activities that they can. And many of them, in the end, if they gain proficiency in English pretty quickly, get the seal of biliteracy. Another thing I wanted to mention in terms of equality and equity, so our English learners have access to the core, which is very important. But one of the things when we look at access to the core is the equity. They have access, but we have to put in supports for our English learners so they can access the core, the courses that they receive, especially at the secondary level, but also at elementary. So listed there are just some of the supports that we have for our English learners. So throughout the day, one of the things that we have for English learners is additional counseling contacts. In some of our schools, we have interventions that we do, tutoring. We have a specialized coach for English learners, teachers, to provide them with strategies. In addition to new new this year is our Mandarin Dual Program. And, of course, our Mandarin Dual Program at Shaolin has assisted our English Learner Program by building on their strengths and their primary language for our Chinese speakers, and then for our English speakers, of course, learning a second language. But in addition to that, our dual program has really had an impact because we have one teacher that goes to the different classrooms at least 30 minutes every week, TK through sixth grade, and teaches the kids Mandarin as a second language. And they've really enjoyed it to the point that they recently won some awards and are continuing to compete with other Chinese language schools. One of the things that we're very proud of is our extended learning opportunities that we have for our students throughout the summer. We have a varied opportunities for them. We know that in the summer, many of our students that are socially, economically disadvantaged, they fall behind because based on the fact that they don't have resources as other students may have. So we are offering for the past, I think we're in our fourth year, offering a variety of programs such as the interdisciplinary program that includes specific standards in language arts and math. We've offered robotics, 3D printing, coding, debate, and also several trips to USC. I wanted to share a little bit, and I'm not going to show that video yet, a little bit about our English learner development opportunities that we have. So as we know, we have so many English learners, different typologies, different proficiency levels. So we really, when we train our teachers, we look at what are the subgroups of kids that they have in their class. But I wanted to highlight Achievement Made Possible, which is one of our professional learning communities that we have that we started about 3 years ago. And during this training, teachers come mainly after school, but they have maybe like sometimes two release days a year, but it's mainly after school that they come, and it's K-12. So it's really the vertical articulation, and the focus is really how to integrate technology for English learners so that it enhances their learning. So here are just some examples of what we do. We've had, of course, face-to-face training. We also do the Zoom platform. So if teachers don't want to come to the RIC to have the training, they could also look at it from their classroom if they want to after school, or when they get home, they could look at it also. So we've offered it in different areas, and one of the things that's really, really valuable is that the teachers feel so empowered that they present to other teachers and they present to themselves in terms of learning. And one last thing I wanted to mention is that K-12 teachers have developed partnerships too. So we have a partnership with one of our dual kinder teachers. They have worked with Roland High ELD class. And the ELD class at Roland High have developed books for the kinder kids, and online they read the books to them, and they together establish a partnership to help themselves at the same time learn more about technology and integrate, but the kids have benefited greatly. But besides that, we have many national and state conferences that we attend, and those are just some examples. So I did want to share a portion of this video. So these are our EL student voices. So one of the tech tools that we use is Flipgrid, and our ELD teachers have all been using it, our AM teachers have all been using it, but also other teachers in the district do it. And what it is, it's an online tool that we use to actually hear student voices and look at how they're meeting the listening and speaking standards, and we calibrate with other teachers and we see how are they advancing. But we also use it to gain advice. So this video is specifically giving teachers an advice, telling us how they felt coming to the school, and also how are teachers going to make learning more successful for them. I don't know if I just The little, yeah, the first one. Oh, they're both great, but just a little bit.
Hi, my name is Juan Valdez, and I'm from Mexico. When I was a brand new student, I felt sad and awkward because it was my first time coming to a new school in a new country. Fortunately, I made good friends that helped me to be successful in school. The hardest thing for me to do in a new school was making friends and adapt to a new environment because I'm not social enough to make friends right away. And this was the first time going to a new school in a new country. The good thing is that I made two good friends that helped me along the first semester of the school year. Right now, they're my best friends. The people that helped me the most was the teachers and my two friends, because the English I know right now is a result of what my teachers taught me and what my friends told me. One of the advices I will give to the teachers who teach kids that don't speak English is to be patient with them, because sometimes it's not easy to teach those type of students. Another advice is to give always their best to teach the kids, because...
So part of the way we use what I failed to mention last is Flipgrid is for our English learner portfolio too, because we want to make sure they're meeting the standards. So that's part of their electronic portfolio. And I wanted to...
So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about students. Is it on? Okay. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about students in our district who are experiencing homelessness. And we identify a student who's experiencing homelessness through the district residency survey, which is then verified by a liaison. We also might determine that a student's homeless from a referral from one of our schools. And our services for students experiencing homelessness are provided through a variety of funding sources, but the LCAP does provide for the majority of the salaries for this hardworking staff you see photographed here. And currently we have 2,771 students experiencing homelessness. But it's important to note that we have identified more than 3,500 throughout the year. And that difference of about 760 students just points to that transient and highly mobile nature of this group of students. But for however long they're here, we do our very best to eliminate those barriers and get them achieving the best they can in school. So students are identified as homeless using the McKinney-Vento federal definition, which includes doubled or tripled up out of economic necessity, and living in a temporary shelter, motel, or hotel, and living in space that's not meant for human habitation. So a car, a garage that's not been updated, a shed, a trailer, campsite, or sometimes, unfortunately, storage spaces. And so...
Sorry.
That's okay. Guess I got to check that earlier. So all students who are identified as homeless are often have trouble with food insecurity. And so they are immediately and automatically provided breakfast and lunch in our schools with no delay. And their parents are provided information about our two food distributions as well on both sides of town. And to help eliminate the difficulties with transportation, liaisons facilitate getting an immediate bus pass for our students. And then because the learning experience is very complex for homeless students, teachers receive professional development in how to address the needs of homeless students, and the FRC staff receives a great deal of training in eliminating barriers. So with so many students who are homeless... we use a tiered system similar to the one you're familiar with PBIS, and this helps focus the services we provide on the need. So most of the services are provided through referrals, And we know that students could be in different tiers and move throughout the tiers throughout the year based on their circumstances. And they could be in different tiers with different aspects of their life. So a student who is doubled or tripled up out of economic necessity would be a lower tier than somebody living on the street or even moving from motel to motel. But that very same student could be in tier three with their behavior or their academic need or another aspect of their life. So it's flexible. So for a tier one student, a student in need of tier one support, parents are given information about how to support their children's educational needs, and that would be through Morning Break Club. We offer parent project and loving solutions, which meet the court mandate when a judge requires that a parent attend parenting classes. We also have a lot of agencies that come in and provide parenting. So we provide students, also we help the parents with HomeLink. Sometimes they have trouble navigating that, and so liaisons provide help with that. Often homeless students, because of the disruption to their educational history and all the trauma in their life and the challenges, they do have academic deficits. So to help with this, we provide the homework club. We provide students with clothing, backpacks, hygiene kits, school supplies, so that they're equipped with what they need for school. And we do a lot of home visits for all kinds of areas, but attendance to make sure kids are coming to school and removing whatever barriers might be keeping them from coming to school every day, providing resources and helping with transportation. These are common referrals. Homeless families often have a bit of difficulty accessing medical care and health care. So we do a lot of Medi-Cal support, helping families get signed up, or sometimes our families fall off of Medicare, Medi-Cal they think they're covered, and something's happened and they've fallen off. So we can identify that and get them back in. And then, of course, we link them to our two clinics, our medical clinic at Via Corta, our vision and dental clinic at the Family Resource Center, as well as a lot of partners. Our Safe and Healthy Kids Fair orients our families to a lot of the resources that are in our community for them. Okay, so tier two, mental health referrals are very common among our homeless students. And this is due to their high mobility, the often high levels of stress in their homes, and other compounding variables. So counseling referrals would go to outside agencies or substance abuse counseling at all our secondary schools. And we also have the Gear Up program at seven of our schools. And we have a new district social worker who provides some group counseling at Giano and Via Corta for students in restorative practices, decision-making, social skills, and other areas that can help them get back on track doing well in school. Sometimes our homeless students, because of the disruption to their schooling and other challenges, we have to help them achieve graduation through reduced credit graduation assistance. So that's meeting the minimum state requirements for graduation. So we do a lot of those out of the Family Resource Center. And then some of our events that are considered tier two, they're by invitation only and based on the student's needs, our Fresh Start, the Thanksgiving basket distribution, Cookie Lady, holiday baskets, Heart and Soul, and Senior Dreams. Then we get to tier three interventions, which is it's a small percentage of the overall homeless population, but these needs are very severe. And so one of the things we do is when families are on the street completely, we refer them to the coordinated entry system, and that helps them get housing. We can also provide motel vouchers when we have them to help families who are suddenly with no place to go. And homeless students often demonstrate extreme mental health and behavioral needs. And to address this, we have an agreement with 5 Acres to provide therapeutic behavior supports. And also we we are doing some referrals to the Department of Mental Health directly for full-service partnership, which is 24/7 support in the home, in the school, and really aimed at getting kids to a place where they can do well in school and have some success in life. And we have a strong linkage with the Department of Public Health when there are severe health issues going on. And some of our Tier 3 events, which are very limited, are Adopt and Shop and Shop with the Cop. So those we reserve for the very, very neediest families. So that's homeless. And now Dr. Despard will talk about foster.
All righty. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the services that we provide with students who are in foster care in our district. Because as you know, our foster students are some of our most vulnerable students. They have some very extreme needs. And so I want to talk to you today a little bit about how the LCAP provides these support in helping removing these barriers that are for our foster students. So currently we have 86 foster students enrolled in our USD. Many of the same services are provided. Many of the same services are provided to foster youth as are provided to our homeless youth. They are immediately provided free and reduced lunch, provided transportation if needed. Parents are given access to before and after school care through options, and information on their student status, social worker, EDS rights holder, etc., is communicated monthly to the schools through the FRC. Just like Laurel shared about the tier supports, we also do the same classification for our foster students to classify how much intensive support these students need. So some of the tier one supports that we provide our students, again, we just mentioned that all of the same tier one supports that we provide to our homeless students are provided to our foster students as we strive to remove the barriers that exist for these students. Foster students tend to have frequent disruptions in their education due to changes in placement. Therefore, every effort is made to keep foster students in their school of origin. A best interest determination meeting is held upon enrollment of a new foster student or a change in placement for an existing foster student to determine whether the student should remain at their school of origin or begin at the new school of residence. We also have an agreement with DCFS that provides hop, skip, drive transportation for foster students to maintain their school of origin if needed. Foster students also often have gaps in their learning. For this reason, summer school opportunities are made available for all students in foster care. Foster parents communicate particular needs. For this reason, the FRC provides our foster family events to provide a family time, a meal, information, and encouragement to build a sense of community among the foster caregivers. We also support for foster parents who need to complete a certain number of hours of parenting education each year. This involves offering a menu of options, including the Parent Project and classes provided by Citrus College that meet the requirements by DCFS. Also, foster students are underrepresented in colleges and universities. For this reason, foster students in grades 10 through 12 attend an event each spring that orients them to the post-secondary opportunities. And all foster seniors in RUSD are provided support in completing the FAFSA and provided gift cards upon completion by LACO. Next, I'll share with you a little bit of the Tier 2 supports that we are able to provide for our foster students through the LCAP. Foster students often perform below grade level and struggle academically due to their high mobility rates. So therefore, through the LCAP, students who are identified in need of academic tutoring are linked with LACO's academic support, which provides in-home tutoring provided by trauma-trained academic tutors. Also, sometimes foster students need social-emotional supports beyond those they receive through the Department of Children and Family Services. Foster students can be referred to participate in social-emotional support groups using restorative practices, social skills, and mindfulness strategies for students at Via Corta and Giano, provided by our LCAP-funded district social worker. They can be referred to participate in mentor activities in collaboration with Mount SAC. We have a picture of one of those up there. The FRC liaisons work with the foster student's social worker or the RAP team to determine whether additional mental health support is needed, such as substance abuse counseling provided at all of our secondary sites to address address substance use. It is also common for our foster students to have limited access to extracurricular activities due to frequent changes in placement. Therefore, the FRC staff works with partners to get foster youth involved in activities such as the VITA program through the LA Sheriff's Department that includes a caregiver education component as well. And in response to the complexity of our foster students' needs, the case management for every foster student is provided by FRC liaisons. And finally, I'll talk about a little bit of the Tier 3 supports that we provide to our foster students in the most need. At times, foster students demonstrate severe behavior problems, refusal to participate in school activities, or even attend school at all. So when a student is demonstrating Tier 3 needs relative to discipline, attendance, or academics, a multidisciplinary team meeting is held that involves all stakeholders in the student's success. When mental health supports do not seem adequate, DMH evaluates those services and offers guidance to the student's RAP team and or the social worker to improve the support. And then the case management is initiated. Students in grades K-8 receive this from our LCAP-funded social worker for the district. And we also have a social worker available to us from DCFS for students in grades 9 through 12 who are in need of the Tier 3 support. So these are just some of the supports that we give and we can provide through the LCAP to our foster students.
Okay, Lynn.
Okay. Let me see. I do have a question. I've got to find them.
I'm curious, Mr. Tincup, in the special ed realm, how do your teachers learn all these new programs that they want to that they're going to integrate in their classrooms? Are they giving PD that's specific for them?
Yes. For attainment, there were trainings that occurred, as well as we gave them the materials. So several trainings over time with all of our moderate to severe educational specialists. For read and write, similar, we had extensive training with general ed as well as educational specialist teachers, and that's ongoing.
And since we know this, as a group, the special ed students don't perform that well on state tests, are they taking their tests on computers, having to type like everybody else, or could that be a problem since you mentioned they have so much trouble typing?
Really good question. Really good question. So there's a couple of different tests. So the students with moderate to severe disabilities take what's called the CAW, and there is no typing in that test. But students with mild to moderate disabilities, yes, they will take it on the computer, and that is something that we want to look into in terms of managing that equipment as well as how they tackle the test. So it's something that I have an interest in, but the nice thing about read and write is that those accommodations that I talked about can also be afforded to them on the state testing. So I want to make sure that students have, when we develop their IEPs, that it's very clear in their IEPs what accommodations are helpful to them and what they're using in the classroom, so not only they can start to build self-efficacy and know what to use, but also we know what they're supposed to be using when they take those measures.
I was thinking of the student that you showed the short video, how much trouble he said he had putting things.
Like, you know, 40,000 letters.
and he was very verbal.
Yes.
You know, and he sounded like he knew things, but I would imagine he would not test well on a computer.
No. No. So that's why we want to start teaching them, not only training the teachers to instruct students on appropriate accommodations, but also help the students acquire knowledge about what helps them. So they could walk into a situation and go, you know what, I can't type 40,000 letters. I'm going to need an accommodation. Here's what works for me. once they get up into the high secondary level.
If I wanted to come in and see some of these programs in action, we wouldn't have to have a formal thing, but I really like to come in and see how these work and how the students, you know, how you accommodate the students and how they use
Absolutely.
Them.
Let's set up some time.
Okay. I guess we've voted to pay for these things.
Exactly. Come and see them.
We're using them and how they work. And I might make some enemies here, but I can't imagine this is for probably special ed and English learners, but I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for a teacher, say a high school teacher or an eighth grade teacher. She just gets her class all set, and now a student comes that speaks no English, maybe has had no education. How can she move her whole class forward with just the one teacher? You know, it to me, we're doing things for foster kids, making these foster parents take classes. We're not doing anything with these new English learner students, and I don't see why the state isn't requiring it. I think all parents have to realize that they have a responsibility in helping educate their kids. Just my thoughts. That's it.
Just a couple of questions. Slide number 18. Are those numbers duplicated or unduplicated? The numbers. So, for example, you have 315 students with autism, but
those are primary disabilities.
Okay, so then that 315 wouldn't include somebody with a speech or language impairment as well.
Not as a primary disability, but inherent in the diagnostic condition of autism is a language impairment.
So they're
unduplicated.
Thank you.
Included in there.
Okay. And then on the, and I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses today. Slide number 19. I can see it better up there. Thank you. The read and write, does it make grammatical corrections for them, or does it just type it exactly how they say it?
It's getting very good. We have it on our phones, some of us. It's getting very good at understanding voices. So it gets as close as possible to the word. It doesn't not correct the grammatical errors. That is the student's job to go through and have it read aloud to them, so that's part of the learning process.
Yeah, because that was my concern, is how are they learning that part of it if it makes the corrections for them, spelling, grammar, et cetera?
No, they have to go through and learn that part of it and make the corrections on their own. That's the whole learning process.
And thank you. And then number 29, slide 29.
There's no odd numbers. They're all even, so it'll be 28.
Let's see. Oh, well, you were talking about the counts. So for the homeless students, how do we identify them, the ones that aren't? Okay, you gave two counts. You said, you know, this many we have, but we suspect that there's this many and that this many is missing.
No, it's not that we suspect. So currently there's 2,771 students who are identified as homeless.
Okay.
But since August 13th, we've had more than 3,500.
Oh,
so
total come through.
Of 760 have left, or they hopefully several of them have exited homelessness. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people who are successful at getting out of this cycle. But it's a very transient population,
right?
And a big part of it is helping families establish records so that they can enter the new school with what they need, and just teaching them, you know, you got to have a file somewhere and it's got to have all these things.
So we still may have several that we don't even know about because maybe they didn't declare it or there's nothing, you know,
they're flying under
to identify
the
radar. Them. Right?
Yep. The kids, that's illustrated in our elementary versus our secondary identification. Okay. The numbers are more in elementary because the parents are a little more forthcoming and eager to get the help. By the time the kids are in secondary, they don't want any attention drawn to themselves.
Right, right.
We invite them to come to Fresh Start. They don't want to come, so we kind of gather the stuff they need and give it to them on the down low.
Right.
Because they do not want that attention drawn.
Right.
So sometimes they keep their parents from turning in the residency survey.
Is that the same thing with foster care?
So no, they come with the all the identifications because they have a lot of services.
Because I know one parent from the high school when my kids were there who the foster parents were like, no, kind of for the same reasons that you just indicated, that the child didn't want people to know that they were in foster care.
Definitely the kids don't want people to know they're in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
So we encourage counselors and teachers to refer to the foster parent as mom or dad, your mom, your dad,
mm-hmm.
and never to say your foster mom, your foster dad. And you're right. They want to fly under the radar. They want to just be like everybody else. And so we're attentive to that. And that's why the agreement with LACO provides the tutoring in the home because they don't even want to be seen on campus getting tutoring sometimes. You're welcome.
Which I'll tag on to that is one reason I feel that we need universal breakfast program in our schools because they don't want to take advantage of that service if they're going to be identified as a needy student or they're afraid that they'll be identified through government resources that they're taking something and ICE might come or somebody might come and take their father or mother away. So I think I'm still pushing for a universal breakfast program. I just want to go back to Dr. Tincup. You know, I went to the Best Buddies prom.
Thank you.
And I tell you, this is the second or third year I've gone now. And it's just really heartwarming to go there. And when Ms. Emma Kemp was asking about the teachers, I had a chance this time to talk to to Mr. D, I guess I refer to him, and some of the other teachers and their families that were there. And I tell you, it's a total different group of teachers that teach special ed. I mean, they are so warm and so caring. It's just unbelievable. And when the students needed something at the prom or needed assistance with the food or something, they were there immediately to help out. You know, as far as teachers identifying students that are in need of some assistance, boy, they're right there on the spot, identifying it right away. And it really was nice seeing the interaction at that event. Someday I hope that we can make that event a little bit better, a little bit fancier than just having it in the gymnasium the way it is. And make it a formal prom. A lot of the girls dressed up in their prom dresses. The boys, totally different. But
I
also
appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, but also the Best Buddies program. I know she didn't mention that, but the Best Buddies program is a phenomenal program that we have. I personally would like to see it enhanced and used more. It's kind of a used on a catch-can basis, and I would like to see that used more in providing services and also giving other students the opportunity to work with the special ed. But the Best Buddy program, I think, is fabulous. And I want to thank Mr. Flores over there that we identified some things that needed to be changed in the new building they're building, those three classrooms. And within 24 hours, he had a resolution to the issue. So thank you for that. On the Family Resource Center, the homeless count, you know, the 2,771. Mm-hmm. I tell you, if you come to the Sioux Chi food distribution every month, it's unbelievable. We're up, you know, we average between, 250 and 300. Families coming through there, and more are waiting to come. I mean, it's just what you can handle in 2 hours, and the need out there for just basic food items is just unbelievable. And going back to the safety issue about kids feeling secure, you know, you can't learn if you don't have food, shelter, clothing, and a feeling of security. And we've identified that there's a lot of students in RUSD that need that support. And we can't expect them to do well in school if we don't provide these supports. And Family Resource Center, I think, is really meeting that need to a great extent now, especially with the dental clinic there now, and then with our relationship with Suu Kyi and things like the Lions Club, Rotary, Kiwanis, and et cetera, all help provide these services to our families. I think that's all I got for that. Yeah, thank you very much.
On page 22, we have all the English learners. We have newcomers, we have migrants, and families. Or how do we identify these? Why do we identify these categories? And how do we treat them differently? Or how why do we want to?
So I'm going to go over a few of the ones that are there. But basically, there's different types of English learners. So our newcomers, the way we identify them is the ones that are recently arrived.
Right.
So it's usually like 3 years or less in U.S. schools. And actually, that's the way they're identified. And sometimes if we have a large amount of newcomers, we do receive funding for that, additional funding. And then in terms of SIFE, students who are with interrupted education, mm-hmm. usually at the high schools, because they come in, they do a student survey.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk to the students. The counselors do a very good job of doing an intake in terms of getting to know who they are and just having a one-to-one conversation after they register. And then that's how we internally, we don't have it internally identify who they are, because we need to know that they need additional support more than other kids. The migrant students, those are identified also internally, and those are our migrant students that either work in the farming industry or either packaging industry, so they move from city to city or sometimes during the summer.
Do we have any of these?
Huh?
Do we have any migrants?
Yes, we have about 71. And we have the most in the San Gabriel Valley right now, because our consortium has dissolved, because we've been getting more migrant ed students and our districts around us have been getting less. So right now we have about 71. We also receive specific funding for that, mm-hmm. to provide additional support of whatever the base program is for all students. And then, of course, the asylee refugee status, those we don't identify. Also in ARIES, that's on a personal level. And then we have our long-term English learners. Mm-hmm. And our kids that are reclassified, they usually are doing very well, but we are required by law to monitor them for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, most of the purpose is for funding. For funding purposes?
For funding purposes, we get funding for newcomers if we have a certain amount. It's a percentage. So, for instance, the past 2-3 years, we received funding. This year, we didn't receive funding. We may receive funding next year. It depends. It's not a number. It's a percentage of increase. For our migrant students, we do get funding. And then, of course, all ELs, we get what we call a Title III funding, which is specific only for ELs. And, of course, our biggest portion is LCAP. And, of course, we can use some Title I funding with ELs.
All right. And for the ESPA test, is the math is only subject to the test?
I'm sorry?
Is math the only subject to the...
No, they take all the subjects unless they've been here a year or less. So, for instance, our newcomer students, even they've been here 2 years, they still take the same test as anybody else, the math test, everything else. So even though that's why our numbers look low, and obviously we want to improve, but when we look at it statewide, we're doing better statewide. But, of course, we're working on that. That's a that's a subject area that we need to improve all around, but specifically we want to make sure that English learners are continue to improve. But they take all tests.
All tests, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
About the read and write, that was amazing to see how he wrote, and he probably struggled in the handwritten one, and the other one was so easy. And you said general ed teachers also use it because a lot of
– yes?
Because, yeah,
general. Yes, general ed teachers have been using it.
Because I know kids are frustrated in writing, but yet their verbal skills are so good, so this is outstanding. I think that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And then about newcomers – that picture that showed the high school, this one. Oh, you're good. do they have a special class that they can attend in high school to help them?
Yeah, they have, our newcomers have a 2-period English language development class. So that's their class that they go. And in addition to having classified staff support them and tutors. But at both high schools, they have that.
And that video sounds wonderful. How long is it to get them to introduce them to...
How long is the video?
Yes.
It depends. It's usually just a few minutes long. It's not really that long. Okay. But some.
No, not that I wanted to see it. I want to see what the kids are getting out of it. You said to ask for bathroom and all that. It sounds very good.
Oh, the first video.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, this one's very good if you listen to it. Yeah, that's okay. So, if you know Spanish, you listen
how
to
how long does it take for them to
it's
listen?
Very good, but it's cute because they talk about the fact that one of them is from Mexico and one of them is from Honduras, which is where my family's from. And so they talk about different things that they felt the same, that they felt scared. They talk about how to go to the locker. They talk about how their ELD teacher is their special teacher to help them. So it's really, really really, really.
And so how long approximately is it?
To get probably, I think it's
like 10
minutes. I think it's 5 or 6. Yeah, I think it's 5 or 6.
Wonderful. Yeah. I mean, what a great idea for these kids to feel comfortable. And then just what Lynn was saying, our newcomers in elementary and not high school and junior high, let's say, what happens to them? Can't we have a newcomer's classroom that they can go to? Before they go into the gen ed classroom.
Surprisingly, at the elementary, at this level, we have some, but we don't have as many. Our newcomers, our large portion of them, are at the secondary level, 7th through 12th grade, with a lot of the kids arriving in high school. So at the elementary level, we do get some, and they also receive English language, what we call designated English language development, which means they have a designated part of their day where they have ELD at the different levels. So our beginning students to our advanced English learners. But surprisingly, we don't have that many that have district-wide that have recently arrived.
They aren't pulled out. They're just in the ELD class, like level one.
So yeah. The way it works, it's all the kids. They call it ELD for all the kids, mm-hmm. which is something sometimes problematic because I will have parents sometimes call me and say, oh, my child's an ELD, and they're not really an ELD, but it's ELD time for everybody, and the kids that are advanced or the kids that are not English learners do something else during that time.
Do you know how many we have in elementary?
How many total?
Approximately that are newcomers.
Our newcomers. Oh, I do.
Do they pull them out?
Yes.
Yeah. But that's during ELD rotation, but they have their separate one, not the level one ELD. They're different. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
They pulled them out of the classroom, but it's by proficiency level. And I do have how many they are total. So let's see. I don't have them. Maybe I'll just email you. I have it by school.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, I'll give you an example. At Killian, there's 8 overall. Well, actually, no. Overall, there's 4. Then at Blandford, yeah.
But is there enough to have a class? Is there 25 or 30 in the total district?
Not at each site. No.
No, not at each site. But if you pulled them together, like at the district office, district somewhere, that they could all go to have a class, to a newcomer's class. Other districts have that when they come in, they get them situated and they learn a little bit of English. And
there's not enough to do because year by year it varies. So some years we may have more, some years we may have less. So usually what we try to do is incorporate them into the regular program with all the kids, and then they get that designated time and tutoring time, and some schools use their funds for support staff.
Okay, and what about the intermediate kids, too? Do they also just have ELD and that's
yes,
all?
Yes,
they don't have a special class
yes,
to go
yes,
to.
Okay, all.
Great presentation. Thank you so much.
Can we stretch?
Sure.
Let me get out first.
I need a good idea with it.
Long sit.
Three. No, that's not allowed.
Are you going to the sheriff's station?
We're not
going to
have time because we've got
four. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, they did, because I had switched. Yeah, I had switched from going there to going to the community center.
I didn't know recess was over.
I didn't hear the bell.
So might want to wait till Sylvia gets back.
I know, because some of them want to go to other events.
Yeah, I might go down there and pick them up from them.
Because they're 5x5x
testing.
Long, yeah. But I only put two up on for auction at RibFest.
Practice.
Okay, she's ready to start.
She's donating them for that.
So after Tricia is Sylvia. So she's in the hall. So go ahead, Tricia.
Okay. So. Our teachers, instructional coaches, and administrators have had numerous learning opportunities this year thanks to LCAP funding. The ability to share practices, ideas, and learning across roles and districts and sites has been pivotal to the growth of Roland. It has significantly impacted student learning because what's happening is the teachers are learning something from different schools, different districts, and different grade levels, and they come bringing it right back into their classrooms immediately thereafter, testing out the ideas and then sharing them further. Teachers had a chance to participate in professional learning days this year. It's been very customized to their learning within the focus areas, and it's been customized to the site level as well. So it's really building on and scaffolding from what they learned last year to what they learned this year. And the exciting part is that they're taking that right back into the classrooms to change and transform what they're doing and the opportunities they're offering children. And then the children get very excited because the teachers come back excited. It's also giving teachers and principals a chance to collaborate and build deeper understanding that goes directly into the classrooms. The instructional coaches are making a huge difference in the schools each year, especially this year, because they're really collaborating so much together. As they go out on their learning experiences, they come back and they share. Every other week, the coaches join each other in meetings, and what they're doing is they're sharing what they're learning, they're sharing what they're actually doing in classrooms, and so their hands-on experiences with children, with teachers on sites are coming back, being shared across the different schools, and then they're actually learning across the focus areas. So that's that communication, that collaboration is making a huge difference because then it's expanding across for all students across Roland. They continue to make a difference at the school sites as they coach teachers, they're co-teaching, and they're supporting principals in preparing site-based professional development. But really, they're working directly with teachers to have the strongest impact on the students. Most importantly, as the athletes need coaches, our teachers are really benefiting from that ongoing instructional coaching as well. Another very exciting part is that our teachers, instructional coaches, and administrators have had many opportunities to go out and participate in conferences. Again, that learning comes right back. It's shared across sites, across schools, and across grade levels. And then the teachers go right back into their classrooms and try the new ideas. So it's a very ongoing process. By attending the conferences, they're able to learn from the experts, and then they bring that expertise back. They build their own capacities, share it with others, and build the capacity of others. And the partnerships that we have with TC and COATSIN, along with other partnerships that we've developed, have made a huge difference as well, because the experts in those situations are actually coming into the classrooms, and they're working side by side with the instructional coaches and with the teachers with our children. And that hands-on experience from experts with our students is really making a big difference in how we're instructing in the classroom later on. And evidence of that learning and sharing across the schools will come to life this Saturday at RUSD Shares, when we have 34 sessions and 62 presenters. And those 62 people are teachers, instructional coaches, and administrators in Roland who have gone out, had these grand opportunities to go learn things, try them back in their classrooms, expand on that learning, develop some expertise, and then they've decided they'll come out and share. So that will be an exciting day. And that, of course, directly benefits all learners, as teachers, instructional coaches, and administrators get to try their new ideas next Monday.
So I'm really excited to share all the great things that have been happening this year in terms of our parent involvement opportunities and parent trainings. This year we've increased in terms of our training opportunities either at the site and at the district level. And now with the addition of our community outreach, we have been going out to, well, I should say Miriam. Ms. Kim's been going out to the community, and she's going to share a little bit about that. One of the things that our parents have been telling us for the past few years, and as I listen to them and the different advisory councils that I work with, they're very happy with the increase in communication that we've had. They've always said that they're happy with all the information that they get from district office. We have a big following, you know, following on Facebook. We also have the Twitter. We've increased our tweeting, and our parents really enjoy looking at all the great things that the teachers are doing. And of course, a lot of our parents work, so this is a way for them to look into what are the kids doing, what are we promoting. And as you can see, it's very high in terms of effective communication. They have also mentioned that they appreciate our LCAP funds have increased our translators, so we have more translators and more increased time in translators. So pretty much they've been getting whatever sessions we have, training, whether we have it here at the district, at the site, or when Miriam goes into the apartments, they're there translating in Spanish, Korean, and Chinese as needed. So when we look at the parent engagement framework, which talks about what can we offer parents, there's different areas that we could offer parents different opportunities. So for instance, the first one is leadership opportunities, so an opportunity to be involved and make sure to give feedback and be that site decision person or that district decision person to give feedback. So at the sites, we have just two examples. There's many, but two examples here, which is the school site council, which that's the one that approves the SIPSA. And then we have our English Learner Advisory Council, which is all made out of our English learner parents at the different sites. We also have great district opportunities for parents to come and give us feedbacks, such as the Superintendent's Council, which is the general meeting from representatives throughout the districts that come and meet with the superintendent, and they ask for topics and then also get feedback on initiatives that we have. In addition to that, we have what we call the PAC, which is another advisory council for migrant ed. We have our DLAC, which is our District English Learner Advisory Council. As we look at our DLAC here, and to the left, they're getting training on robotics, and 3D printing. We've been getting so much more parents that now what we do, we open up our lounge area here sometimes, and parents go over there because we try to meet with them with small groups and not do it always like a conference style and sit and get, but do it a little bit more as a group activity. So at that there, they were learning about just what their kids are doing in coding, 3D and robotics. So they brought in robots. They were working on that. If you look to your right, we also have our GATE Advisory Council that meets almost at a monthly basis. One of the things that the parents requested last year was that we have night meetings because they're very well attended in the morning, but they wanted to make sure we had night meetings for them, and we tried it out this year, and we've been having meetings Friday night, and usually we get from 30 to 50 parents. The first time we did it, we thought we weren't going to get any takers, but it was full. So we just had one last week, and we had about, trying to think how many, we think we had about 35 parents that time. And then, of course, our wonderful translators and student services ladies are there, our classified support staff that help us and assist us in making the parents feel welcome. The other component of parent involvement is making sure that we provide the training for parents in different areas and also in terms of based on what they need. So not only what we think they need or what we want to make sure that we get feedback from them, because we may think we want to provide this workshop at a certain level or a certain topic, but maybe that's not what parents need. So we try to always do our needs assessments the year before and look at what are the needs. So this year we did our Latino Literacy Project with parents, which is really an opportunity for them to look at different literacy books, different genres, and look at how do we read to kids, how do we ask questions that are meaningful from kinder through sixth grade. We also worked at our big parent involvement conference that we have at the Palms, where we had over 150 parents attend, and we had several workshops, and those are just a few things. They're very interested in A through G course requirements, so we always make sure that we have a session on that. And then if there's a lot of activity, parent involvement activities at the school site, I've just put one picture of Hurley. So Hurley this year had a mini parent conference. So what they did is they had several sessions that teachers held for their parents, and they kind of, you know, Dr. Alvarez was the opening keynote speaker, and then teachers were out in their classrooms giving parents, and parents had the opportunity to either go to literacy training, they either went to counting collections. They had all kinds of different workshops for parents, and the parents were very happy with it. But that's just one example, because a lot of our schools do a lot with our parents on a monthly basis.
All right, this is me. Oh, it's okay. I don't need the clicker. It's just.
All right, so it's great to see the board's vision here in the LCAP, and especially now with this role that I have, just bringing the extension of the district into our families who cannot, for whatever reason, make it to the schools, come out and participate. And we know that innovative learning really means supporting everybody, which means our parents and our community members, and really trying to remove as many barriers as possible to close the achievement gap. Because again, oftentimes for whatever reason, families can't make it to the schools in the nights and the days or the hours that we set. And I have yet to meet a parent that says, I don't want to help my child. It's just, it's not convenient for the time that they have. So I have been able to, on Saturdays, there's a picture up there,
work with parents when they drop their children off at the Saturday Exploration Academy. I've worked with them in the area of math, and they seem to have a really good time with it because we get to use manipulatives there. And then on several Friday evenings, I've been able to go into the apartments and do trainings around the area of literacy and teaching reading strategies, where they actually sit with their child and practice the strategies that they've learned right then and there. Last Friday was great. I partnered with the Los Angeles County Library. There was a librarian from our Roland Heights branch that came with me, and we issued 32 library cards. And for our families that can't make it to the library, they now have access to all of the online resources because now they have a Los Angeles County Library card. I've also partnered with the Foothill Family Clinic and bringing mental health services into their homes. And the director came and explained all the things that were available to them and their families, again, because they can't make it to school to hear what these services are. And one of the great things that we've just started this week in the picture you see there is a tutoring center in one of the complexes that is led and manned by our students, our high school students, and they're supporting the learning of our younger students who live in that complex. Because we all know that when you have a very strong and robust home to school, school to home connection with the increased communication, it really does accelerate the student performance and their achievement. So that's just some of the things that we have been doing to reach into our greater community.
All right, the next slide is about leadership in RUSD. Isn't this a great picture? This is one of our principals. And as you know, our principals are our instructional leaders at the site, and as such, it is their charge to ensure that teachers have the support they need and lead the direction at the site. So they as well have many opportunities to build their skill and knowledge and take it back to the site. And at many of these occasions, they're also learning side by side with their teachers, which is what the research says is more impactful when we're learning side by side with our teachers. And here you see some of those opportunities. The next generation science standards have been provided through the California Science Center. They've come and provided professional development in K-12. We see that our principals are embarking on such programs as project-based learning, and they also go to sites and other districts that are implementing project-based learning to see what they're doing and bring it back to the site. Here are some other opportunities. They're visiting High Tech High to see the program, and if that is something that they're interested in, they come back and they support that program with their teachers as well. They have the opportunity to attend conferences and also be part of district-wide programs such as PBIS. They are leading the charge, and they set the tone at their school. And so we know that it is very important for our principals to be part of the learning every step of the way. We also provide educational services, provides professional learning opportunities once a month for our principals. It's a three-hour block. Sometimes we go 4 hours. Sometimes it's 5 hours. So sometimes it does dip into the principal's meeting. However, we know how important that is, and we don't want to provide professional development that is too brief and not enough for them to take back the learning to their site the next day. So these are many of the ways that our principals are receiving opportunities for learning, and a lot of it is aligned to what our teachers are receiving. And many times the principals receive it before the teachers so that our principals are aware of what our teachers are receiving during district-wide professional learning opportunities. And so now, after those four sections, we'd like some time to give you some time for questions and answers.
Okay, Angelina?
No questions, but I do just want to say the one thing that I'm really happy to see included this year is the addition of Miriam Kim's position and the more community outreach, because I think that in the end, that's going to make a huge difference and going to have an impact in all the other areas
that we have. So that's great to see.
I just want to add on to that. I was just reading this same article that Assembly Bill 2878 now requires, it broadens the responsibility of including family engagement in the LCAP plan. And when we used to have three or four sessions and that were centrally located, it just didn't cut it, having people go out to the families, the apartments. We see that with the food distribution every month, that people, we have people that would carry the food to their car, but most of those people walk to the food distribution, and the people that would normally carry food to the car is carrying it to their house, basically, because they all live in that, that area. Or even the Rotaries, when they have their turkey giveaway, Dr. Mitchell's drove many people to their homes on that day, because they had no way to get the food back home. So, they are limited on transportation, and going to them, I think, is going to be a great resource to have. The other thing is, on the when you talked about the library card, I just gave Dr. Mitchell a flyer today that's from the library, where they have a one-page sheet that shows all their services. And one of them is, if they have a library card, they can actually get one-on-one tutoring, and the fee is waived. And I'm just wondering, do we have a one-page sheet like that that we can give families that say, if your student needs help, homework help, or whatever, here it all is on one little page. Well, they also have a library club or homework club, similar, I guess. And they have a homework club where you can get assistance there. But just having that resource available on one little sheet would be nice that we can just give to the families.
Put it in the new student packet.
Yeah, in the student packet. I guess next year, was it this year? Where on the back of their ASB card, they had to have phone numbers. If they need assistance, they can get help also. So that's it. I just think I agree with Ms. Pride that getting services out to where people live is great. That little, I noticed you have the, you didn't mention it on here, but the little lending library and the laundry room, this one little picture here. It's in the laundry mat of the apartment building, and it's a little lending library where right there on the bottom right-hand corner, that's in the laundromat of the apartment building over by Hurley. So people can get books in the laundry, down at the, while they're doing the laundry. We have our little lending library at our house, and I tell you, that is the most popular thing in the world. The shuttle stops there now, and people are coming from all over. We actually ran out of children's books about a week and a half ago, and so my wife put a thing on social media saying we need children's books. Oh, we got tons of them. We got tons of them, and including Laura. Remember, some people remember Laura Trevor? That used to teach her, she contacted us through social media. She wants to autograph some books and put them in there. So it's amazing how social media gets the word out. Yeah. But
that's how I got the bookcases from
Mapus
Brothers.
Yeah. So I mean, you just put a library out in front of your house, and people go there. The kids love going there. So anybody can do it. Thank you.
For the community, and we put libraries and those other things. But I do receive concern from the mobile home park. They keep saying their internet speed very slow, so they won't be able to finish the homework. And they talk to the owner, but no result. So is that the part we can help, or a district can help, because that because the kids can't do homework, then it's part of our duty to help them. So how
So if students in our district, when we did our survey, as you might remember, around internet connectivity, it was whether or not they had access to the internet and whether or not that access was reliable. Mm-hmm. And so it would be self-reported by students if they needed something, and if they were high school students, would be eligible then for hotspots when we did the 1 million project. And then we could look to see, I don't know what specifically what you're speaking of, if that's an area where there is lack of cell tower service in that area for internet connectivity, if it's the quality, if the mobile home park provides Wi-Fi, right, or if it is the one that an individual person has purchased. So I don't,
the
I'm not sure.
The complaint I received is the mobile home park owner, I mean the facility, they provide the internet access that
for the park. The individual residents may need to acquire their own Wi-Fi if the Wi-Fi that is provided in the community is not reliable.
Have you spoken to Ken Meng over there yet?
Yeah, he's the one.
Yes, I thought.
Two parks, though.
Two parks.
So there's Hialeah, too. I don't know if they're having a problem.
They have the problem, so yeah.
I just know with speaking to Ken Meng and the that there's a lot of issues there between the mobile home owners and
this is not part of our LCAP.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Stop.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right, Lynn, thank you.
I don't have any questions, but I want to thank you. This was a good way to present what you presented today, having the in-depth, like a team approach. Each one of you took your expertise and shared that with us. I really appreciate it, and thank you very much.
Okay, I also wanted to say thank you again. I really like the presentation. And Miriam, it's wonderful what you're doing, not only reaching out to the parents and the kids and everything, but I love the high schoolers. What good self-esteem for them to do this, and good for the little kids to see these kids that are in high school that, oh, I'm going to be like them, good role models and everything. Wonderful. And I'm really glad you talked about the instructional coaches, because when I go visit classrooms, they say they have taught them so much, and I see them in the classroom doing lessons, which the teachers are going to do right after they leave, and it's excellent. So thank you again for a great presentation.
We have a couple more slides before we conclude. Again, here's a timeline of our process, and we look forward to bringing back the draft of the 1920 LCAP plan, and for board approval in June 18th. Again, we want to reiterate that we definitely go through a process of collecting feedback from our stakeholders, students who were surveyed, again, 5th through 12th grade, focus groups, same grades at 10 different schools, and parent and community survey, as well as surveying our staff and different committee groups. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
On behalf of the board, great job, all of you. What a great team you make. Thank you so much.
Yay. They are a great team.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you. Very good. And so we will recess to closed session at 6:52 p.m. We have returned to, good evening, we have returned to open session at 7:53 p.m. And for the record, Angelina Pride needed to leave during closed session. May have a
7:20.
Oh, at what?
7:20.
At 7:20 p.m., sorry. So there is no closed session report tonight. May I have a motion and a second to adjourn the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education meeting?
I move.
All in favor, say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. The meeting is adjourned at 7:53 p.m.